Hey everyone, this is Kyle Dvorak. You can follow me on Twitter at FFKyleTheKid, along with my co-host Hassan Rahim on Twitter at HRR5010. You're listening to the Rotoviz Season Review. This week we're discussing the AFC South, looking at the good, the bad, the ugly of what happened in this division in 2017. For those of you who don't know, Rotoviz is a sports data and analytics site that publishes over 1,000 articles per year and has a suite of more than 20 proprietary apps. Go to rotoviz.com, check out the site. Hassan, what's up? It's you and me, the podcast rookies, essentially. They gave us the keys to the Ferrari.
Hell yeah, I'm actually pretty excited to get into the AFC South, and I'm really excited to be talking with you. Like, I really enjoy the work you do here on Rotoviz Radio, and I'm super stoked to get a chance to talk to you.
Yeah, that's exciting. I gotta say, like, I think a year or two ago, this division would have been, like, the one no one wanted to take. Now we've got Jacksonville on the rise, we've got Mike Vrabel at Tennessee. I think, like, I'm personally really excited for this one.
Yeah, and, you know, I mean, the AFC South just seems to be, as you mentioned, is just sort of coming on right now. They're coming into their own, and I'm really excited to sort of fillet this division and see what we can figure out for next season and, you know, hopefully figure out what happens in redraft and dynasty.
Yeah, let's get into it. First stop, Houston. The big story is obviously Deshaun Watson. Can we expect anything close to what we saw this past season, or is he coming back down to earth?
I kind of hope that he, even if he regresses, he doesn't regress too much. I actually looked at the Rotoviz screener and on, and I wanted to see what his AYA looked like on a per game basis, you know, because he missed most of the season because of he tore his ACL. And I noticed that he posted one of the top AYAs of any of the rookie quarterbacks. The only QBs who had superior AYAs from 2001 on included guys like Breeze, Prescott, RG3, Big Ben, and there's one more who I'm forgetting right now. You know, he completed approximately 62% of his passes, and he seemed to be an accurate thrower. He seemed to be accurate downfield, and, you know, and I know it's not just me thinking this, but he genuinely made that Houston offense significantly better just by being on the field. Afterwards, we were treated to Tom Savage, who really, really made me miss Deshaun Watson.
Yeah, I'd say his rookie season, like, promising is an understatement. He truly was, like, he made this offense look like it had one of the brightest futures in the NFL. In terms of touchdowns, though, 9.3%, I believe top five touchdown percentage since the merger, so expect that to come down. But as far as long-term outlook goes, the success of his rookie season really makes me pretty positive going forward.
Yeah. And that was one of the things is that I noticed that his rookie season was fairly comparable to guys like Marcus Mariota and Russell Wilson. And that's only from a pure passing perspective. I don't know whether or not we can, expect him to be a rushing quarterback per se, but he's surrounded with so many good weapons that it's really hard to see him not really producing, especially in fantasy football for us next season.
Yeah, his biggest weapon right now, DeAndre Hopkins, I think people are looking at him as potentially the number two wide receiver. He was the number one wide receiver this year because Antonio Brown missed those last few games. But I think, interestingly enough, if you look at the Game Splits app, with and without Deshaun Watson, it was just about half a point drop-off in PPR with and without him. So do you expect that Watson comes back and Hopkins stays on the course he was?
Yeah, I'd actually kind of think that to be the case. One of the things that we should note about Hopkins is just how many raw targets that he saw. He saw 173 raw targets. He caught 96 of those balls, and he posted almost 1,400 yards, and he had 13 TDs. He had a 35% target share, which is the most that he's ever had over his career, and this was also his career best in TDs. You know, his next best season was in 2015, and remember when he saw like 191 targets, and he caught 111 balls, and a lot of fantasy analysts in 2016 mentioned to kind of avoid going into Hopkins and drafting him as that top wide receiver just because of that ridiculous target number that he saw, that target share. And I think that next season with Watson coming back, we can see Hopkins experience a reduction in targets because, as you mentioned, he saw the same number of targets with or without Watson. But also just because even if he were to, we just know that Watson is a better quarterback than whoever, than Savage or any of the other quarterbacks that, like, Hopkins has really been saddled with. And, you know, even if he was to see a good reduction, a healthy reduction in targets, I would say he still puts up reasonable, you know, wide receiver one numbers. And so I don't see why there's any reason why he shouldn't be one of the top wide receivers coming off the board.
Yeah, I'll say they lost C.J. Fedorowicz and Ryan Griffin, one and two tight ends. They had Bruce Ellington, who was actually commanding a decent amount of targets, and then Will Fuller, who we saw have a really successful year until his injury. Those guys will all be coming back, and the target share should go down. but then the regaining of Watson should definitely balance that out. The running game, I think, is a different story, where we've got Lamar Miller, who's underwhelmed since he's gotten there, and Deonta Foreman. What do you make of that situation?
I'm Team Foreman, which is pretty tough to say, especially since I drafted him a lot in best balls, especially as my last running back coming off the board. His Achilles tear was, you know, genuinely kind of painful, because I'm a big fan of his. We here at RotoViz, I believe, he tested fairly well in the prospect lab and did really well in the prospect eval phase, and we were very high on him, myself especially. And just knowing that it's an Achilles tear, I'm hoping he doesn't lose much of that explosiveness, you know, that really made him that freak running back who was really starting to push Lamar Miller and kind of pushing it towards an RBVC, like an almost 50-50 split between the two. What are your thoughts?
Definitely, I'm with you on Deonta Foreman. Going into 2017, people were obviously higher on him than they are now after the Achilles tear and not making a huge splash as a rookie. But going into 2017, looking at the running back class, Kevin Cole's running back success model had him as a 53% chance of having a top 12 PPR finish within the first 3 years of his career due to his just insane college production. Even without being a great receiving back, there was an argument for him being one of the top running backs coming out, and seeing that he didn't make a splash as a rookie, he's a big buy for me in Dynasty, and he'll be a deep zero RB type stash in redraft.
And I just wanted to say that even if he does sort of push Lamar Miller into that RBBC, Miller kind of works out pretty okay as a receiving back. He's all, you know, that was where he made his bread and butter back in Miami, and it's fine if he's a change of pace back. But really, I think we should see where like Miller's ADP starts to shake out. It's possible, you know, like once we find get news that Foreman's going to be getting healthy and sort of coming back, he's going to be coming on, that Miller's ADP, you know, price starts to drop a little bit, and it might, you know, kind of be feasible where you can have, where like Miller actually goes down to draftable range because no one's going to really be viewing him as that three down workhorse.
Yeah, I can definitely get on board with that, seeing if Miller falls, he's still, it'll be a committee at best. Foreman isn't going to come in and take over, and Miller has had success as a receiver. Speaking of receivers, the last major talent piece on this roster, Will Fuller. Are you buying or selling Will Fuller coming in this coming year?
Yeah, so Will Fuller is actually kind of interesting because he seemed to develop chemistry with Watson as the season went on. He had three of his best games with Watson under center. And bear in mind, Will Fuller missed 6 weeks to start the season because of that freak injury. The one thing that I can't see happening again is Will Fuller posting 7 TDs again, just being that hyper-efficient with the little volume that he did see. It's given that he's mostly deployed as a deep threat. You know, his A-dot is over 15.5 yards, as according to Josh Hermsmeyer, Myers, airyards.com. That was across both seasons, so you can see that he's used as a situational deep threat. It kind of depends on where his ADP shakes out. I don't know if I want anything to do with him if he's going ahead of several established veteran talents. But at the same time, I just want to note that both Nuke and Fuller have managed to coexist with Watson under center. It sort of just goes to show you that Watson might be capable of supporting, you know, two top 24 or at least one top 24 and one top 36 wide receiver next season, and we should all really just be hoping he comes back fully healthy next season. What are your thoughts on Fuller?
Yeah, you've got this pulled up, I believe. This is the RotoViz Game Splits app with and without Watson for Will Fuller. The touchdowns, like you said, that can't be sustained, but at least this speaks to it in some way. 20.9 points with Deshaun Watson, 4.9 without. We should at least expect to see somewhere in between, and that could lead him to a top 36 season. I think it's good for Houston. Tennessee had a season like Houston had in the second half, the entire season, more bad than good. What happened to take the 2016 Titans to what we saw in 2017?
I honestly just think it's a little bit of just Mariota regressing from that, you know, otherworldly efficiency he was able to put in the red zone. And I know he was hampered by injury for most of the season. He was dealing with hamstring, and then he had a couple of other, you know, nicks and scrapes. It really doesn't help for a guy who is just such a good improviser when the pocket really sort of breaks down. So you're kind of seeing this all across breakdown on offense. It also kind of goes to show you that the years or whatever exotic smash mouth is kind of just doesn't work when your mobile QB just doesn't work out. And I'm really glad to see the Titans actually make this change in their coaching staff. I have no idea what to expect, but I was wondering if you had a really good read on that.
Really good read might be strong, but Mike Vrabel has already come out saying he wants to play a more college-style offense that suits Mariota's skill set better, wants to see more screenplays and more play action. I hate to get on board with this team too early, but he really sounds like a coach who wants to optimize the talent on his team, And I think in terms of the Mariota regression, where he was well over 5% touchdown rate in his first 2 years and dropped to a staggering 2.9 this past year, the way Mike Vrabel's talking makes me think that he wants this team's talent to shine, and that makes me want to buy on Derrick Henry, Corey Davis, even the more ancillary pieces like Rishard Matthews or even Delanie Walker for one last year. What do you think of the talent around Mariota, considering that we may expect a good rebound for 2018?
That's definitely the hope. Just like you said, like a lot of those guys should be on your dynasty radars, and maybe if you're playing in a DE premium league, or just as a DE stash, you want to look at Jonnu Smith, Rishard Matthews. Did you mention
yes?
Him? Yeah, my bad. I don't know what to do with Eric Decker, but you know you're still looking at a very capable receiving core. You're looking at just guys who, if they play the way Vrabel wants them to play, and he wants, you know, his receivers to make his plays, you're still looking at a team that is going to, it has to just be better than what we were looking at this season. Like you mentioned, with Delanie Walker, I'm kind of interested in him mainly because he was he was heavily targeted when they reached the red zone. He had about 12 targets in there. He caught 4 of those balls, and he scored 2 TDs. He also had 2 red zone rushing attempts, and he scored a touchdown on that. So that's actually kind of cool to note. What are your thoughts on Derrick Henry and Corey Davis, and where do you think their dynasty ADP shakes out this offseason?
Derrick Henry, I will say that I like Derrick Henry in the sense that I think this offense is due for a rebound, just by the way Mike Vrabel speaking early into optimizing this team's talent. But I would say the dynasty community at large is still going to be too high on him, like they've been for the past few years. The one big deciding factor is that after 2017, DeMarco Murray now has no dead cap, and his cut would save $6.5 million. If they cut him, and it would seem like they would cut him and not invest in running back, if they cut him and give him a chance to be the full-time bell cow, I would be as high on anyone as him. But until that happens, I think people are going to jump the gun a bit quick on him.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's kind of like, losing DeMarco Murray would definitely be a boon to Henry's fantasy value. But the worry is, again, you know, we've got a fairly deep free agent class. There are a bunch of really good change of pace backs who are available. And the worry is Tennessee goes out and signs one of those guys as a pass catching compliment. And then, again, to your point, it just becomes Henry is overvalued. The one thing I will note is, assuming this offense is going to progress next season, that probably means you're going to have more red zone trips, which could be fine if they're opting to rush, use Derrick Henry a little bit more in the red zone. But again, like you said, I think we'd have to see where his ADP shakes out, and I don't know if we can afford him in startups.
Yeah, I think it's not going to be the talent or the opportunity that really scares me off him. It's really just going to be the price, because I think rushing opportunity will be there, and if DeMarco Murray leaves, the receiving will be too. And the talent, I think he's not the greatest runner, but he's a guy who can excel on an offense that is designed around making him play well. It'll just be that people have been waiting for the Derrick Henry breakout for years, and now that it looks imminent, they're willing to pay King's ransom for him. Corey Davis kind of has that top 5 insulation, but he's a guy I could get into a little more. We saw a flash of it in the playoffs. Do you think that's something we could see more of next year?
I'm kind of hoping we do, if only because, again, like you said, he's a top 5 pick. He's going to get volume. We saw that earlier before he was, you know, sidelined because of his hamstring injury. He missed most of the season because of it, and it's really tough to tell when he came back whether or not he was just this really poor receiver. He had one of the worst, seasons as a rookie in recent memory. He just looked really poor, and he looked really out of shape, if that makes sense. Like, I don't know if it just took him a while to get caught up to the speed of the game, because he did have a couple of, you know, he has flash potential, and maybe he looked to build on it. So what do you hope to see comes out of Corey Davis next season, especially in redraft, given his ADP?
Corey Davis next season, I think we might still be waiting after next season for the true breakout, because Rishard Matthews truly has been a good player on this team, and he's commanded a decent amount of targets in addition to Delanie Walker has. So he might play the 1B role to Rishard Matthews 1A, along with Delanie Walker taking targets. So I think expecting a ginormous breakout next year would be a tall order. I think what we're looking for is the efficiency. If he can even hit league average efficiency next year, and then when Rishard Matthews eventually leaves, he can turn that into big fantasy points. So I think if you want to buy, you're buying for a longer-term window than next year is what I'd say.
And what are you doing with Taywan Taylor? Just out of curiosity, I know it's not on the show sheet, but I just wanted to see what your thoughts on him were.
I actually like Taywan Taylor coming out as a prospect. My only problem is that he's got Corey Davis ahead of him, Rishard Matthews ahead of him, Delanie Walker, and then potentially Jonnu Smith. On deeper leagues, definitely a stash, essentially costing you nothing. Maybe a waiver wire guy, maybe trading one of your last picks to get him. Definitely an end of the roster kind of guy, but I wouldn't expect much out of him.
That's actually good notes. So I'm gonna see if I can find Taywan Taylor off waivers. Otherwise, I'll just not bother trying to buy him using any of my rookie picks.
Yeah, I think I'd agree with that. Before we get into the Indianapolis Colts, let me remind you that even though this season is over, it's a fantastic time to sign up for the RotoViz NFL Pass, which you can get right now for 30% off. This discount is for listeners only, and it's available through the NFL Podcast homepage, rotoviz.com/podcast. Your subscription gets you unlimited access to all of our NFL content, and best of all, it supports this podcast. Again, be sure to get your 30% discount for an NFL Pass at rotoviz.com/podcast. The Colts have looked like a completely different team without Andrew Luck, which makes sense. He's truly one of the most surefire prospects, and then panned out having incredible touchdown seasons. What do you expect, if you even expect to see him in 2018?
Initially, I was kind of optimistic, but Dr. Jeff Budoff wrote a fantastic article about Andrew Luck's shoulder, and he, you know, looked over 5 medical scenarios, and you know, all of them just are a very, very good, thorough look at what we can expect from Andrew Luck next season, given his injury and given what we know that is public information. And, you know, right now I don't know what to make of this team, especially given that we're yet to really hear reports about Andrew Luck truly being 100%. He's looking 100%. And it's a little worrying, I guess, mainly because I don't know if this franchise managed to ruin like one of the best QB prospects we had in the last decade. What are your thoughts?
Of the 5 possible scenarios for his recovery, I think 3 to 4 of them said this may result in long-term damage that weakens his strength and his throwing capabilities, which is a bit worrying. And I think Jeffrey Budoff's conclusion was that until we see him at 100% throwing full velocity, you have to put a pretty strong discount on him. And I think that's – I'm going to take his word on it. He's got a lot of experience. If you listen, he's been on a few podcasts for RotoViz. He just rattles off his accomplished career as a physician, and I'll take his word on it that unless we really see him out there throwing 100%, it's either stay away or apply a heavy discount. I'm just not sure that's what everyone else will be doing.
Yeah, and I think it makes him a pretty easy fade in dynasty leagues for me, if only because in the startup you can find other, you know, quarterbacks who you can replace there. You don't need to really worry about that quarterback slot. You can get someone unsexy, like maybe a Matt Stafford or something instead, and let someone else chase the allure of Luck. With redraft, hopefully by the time we're drafting, we'll have a better, clearer picture of Andrew Luck, and I'll just live with it in my dynasty leagues, and hopefully we'll have a better sense of what he's doing for the upcoming fantasy season.
I agree with that. You just kind of have to look at him as though you're hopeful he comes back, but you're planning for maybe not at least till 2019. And I think with that, it leaves me at T.Y. Hilton can still produce, but with a discount, and beyond that, you know, Dante Moncrief and the running game is a big fade for me.
Yeah, so with the running game, I guess the only real interest I have probably would be Marlon Mack, and that too as like my final RB in best ball leagues, only because he has that big play ability. And, you know, in rounds 16 through 18, if you really need another running back, he's got that, maybe he has 1 or 2 big games and he sneaks his way into your lineup and he just sort of helps out. Otherwise, I don't really know. I believe Frank Gore said to be a free agent. Maybe they go out and they draft a running back using a high equity pick. I'm still unsure because I don't know what they're going to do, because this entire team needs a massive roster overhaul from top to bottom.
Yeah, this entire roster hinges on the injured shoulders of Andrew Luck, if you will, and until we know what happens then, I like Marlon Mack in the sense that, you, like you said, in best ball, all he has to do is pop once or twice, which he showed some interesting efficiency, some interesting touchdown rates, but other than that, I think we saw from T.Y. Hilton that he has this security blanket with Andrew Luck. If you look at his games, when he played a top 16 pass defense with Andrew Luck, he averaged 12.7 points per game, 16.5 playing a bottom 16 defense. And with Jacoby Brissett, that floor just bottoms out completely, 7.4 points per game playing a top 16 defense this past season. You really saw it. They just could not put anything together when they played even competent defenses. And funny enough, probably a small sample thing, but 19.24 points per game this past season playing bottom 16 defenses. So I think what that says to me is he really is talented. The talent is still there. It's just the situation is so rough without Andrew Luck. Is that how you take this, or you think you take it a different way?
No, I agree with you entirely. And part of it is just like looking at his abysmal 2017. Some of it just comes with the fact that, as you mentioned, under Jacoby Brissett, this was a less efficient offense. They had significantly fewer red zone trips than, you know, they had than they were when they were, you know, quarterbacked by Luck. Hilton saw the same number of targets as Jack Doyle in the red zone, and he only got two, and he scored zero TDs. So you're looking at a guy who had very little TD equity this entire season. You know, when they got into the red zone, most of that went to Jack Doyle. And even then, you know, you can't really go out and say, well, Jack Doyle was the most efficient wide receiver in the red zone, so I'm just going to target him, just because this entire, as you said, like this entire offense, this entire passing game, and it's probably just a hard fade if Luck is just not healthy next season. I'm more interested in your take on Dante Moncrief, just because I think he's a free agent, and he just had this disaster of a year for a guy who's heading into his contract year.
People have said this before, and my heart didn't want to believe it, but the more I watch him play and see his kind of absurd touchdown rates until this year, it makes me think that he might just be a sort of tight end type player. So I think situationally, if he gets on a team that throws a lot of touchdowns, like we saw with his Andrew Luck years, I could get in on buying him, but he has to go to a team that's going to throw him a lot of touchdowns, because that's where he's going to make his money. And if he doesn't go to that type of team, I think it's a fade for me.
I think you kind of just want to get out from under Moncrief, even in Dynasty. You know, again, I think he probably ends up signing a one-year prove-it deal. I don't know if that's with the Colts or if that's with another team. He's never really lived up to his promise with or without Luck. We still seem to be waiting on this breakout of a season that just seems to never really come. I don't own him anywhere, and I don't know what his current going price would be. So I might just be looking to move him if there's an owner in your team who's fairly bullish on the Colts' chances next season. I don't know how many of those guys exist.
Yeah, if any of them exist. I think for 4 years now we've seen he'd put up some big touchdown numbers and that's it. He really wouldn't do anything else. And that keeps giving people hope. Sell people on that hope and get out.
Yeah, I mean, this is a guy who I think eventually started running behind Chester Rogers, who also I'm not particularly sold on. I have him on a stash in a couple of very deep dynasty squads. I don't know if he's ever going to see the light of day either.
Yeah, but that does say something that, like, a guy you really have very little faith in is passing up on Dante Moncrief, who a year or two ago people thought was entering this blue chip phase. I think Dante Moncrief, like you said, if someone wants him, get out. Moving on to Jacksonville, how did this team go from worst to first so quickly?
And they just, man, that was just like all on the defense, right? Like they just went out and just, what they didn't draft, they purchased. Do you think the Cowboys regret not taking Jalen Ramsey and then Derrick Henry?
I think they would never admit it, but that would have been so much smarter.
Yeah, but again, I think this went from like that defense first mentality, and we still kind of, we saw them, you know, annihilate the Steelers in the early season. We saw them really give New England a tough time in Foxborough, you know, in the NFC Championship game. I mean, this is a defense that's young, it's fast, it's aggressive. It seems to be like the right defense for the modern NFL. Would you agree with that?
Absolutely. I think, like, it's truly been awesome to watch this team spend so much draft capital and so much money on building a defense that is built around getting sacks and stopping passes. And I think it was very refreshing to see a team that seemed so forward-thinking. And I think for them to sustain this, they'll have to be really smart at managing their cap, because there's going to come a day where they start losing free agents. And if they decide to, say, sign Blake Bortles long-term, where he would command $20 million a year, they won't be able to. And we'll see them take the Seahawks route of having an elite defense for a few years and then come crashing back down.
And that's hopefully something we shouldn't see. I mean, the Jaguars could release Bortles prior to March 14th, and they have to decide on that very quickly, because if they do so, they'll actually incur a $0 cap hit. And they could clear his entire, you know, $19 million of salary that is owed to him for 2018. It probably makes them contenders for any of the top free agent quarterbacks. I don't know if they're going to go into the draft for a quarterback, just because it seems like their window is wide open right now, and they might want just a slightly, and this doesn't mean Bortles is bad. He's had, by all accounts, a fairly up and down season, but he's put together some very good games. I just don't know if Jacksonville sees him as a guy who's worth committing $19.1 million to next season. What do you think?
I'm worried that they do, because I really do want to see this organization succeed, because they've done such a good job, like you said, making a defense that's built for the modern NFL. And judging by what we've seen from them year after year, making picks like Leonard Fournette, basically making Leonard Fournette one of the highest paid running backs in the NFL right off the bat in his career, and then him playing just average, makes me kind of think that they're willing to sign on with Blake Bortles. But for reference, if they were to take the first overall pick Jared Goff makes from his rookie year to the end of his contract, between $5 and $9 million a year, Blake Bortles would cost them 20. That extra $10 million could be the difference between getting, say, Miles Jack back or not. I kind of want to hedge hope against them getting rid of Blake Bortles, but if they do and they go take any rookie quarterback, I think that's how they sustain the success.
Yeah, and that would actually be, I mean, again, this is going to be a team that's going to be very interesting to follow just through the draft. I don't know. Do you think any of the rookies spark your interest? Who do you think would make for a good fit for this team?
Well, I don't expect them. Obviously, they're out of contention of Sam Darnold, maybe Josh Allen, depending on what the Browns want, Josh Rosen. And then it comes to this tier of guys maybe they get close to with their first-round pick, or even they could move up in the second round and look at a guy like Lamar Jackson. I think I would love to see them take a shot on Lamar Jackson, because I want to see him play on an offense with a talented running back, and also he might be the only guy they're willing to spend the draft capital on.
Yeah, and the guy who I wonder would fall to them, I wonder if Baker Mayfield falls. What are your thoughts?
If Baker Mayfield falls to them, I would love that, because I think Baker Mayfield definitely could be, in my opinion, might be the best quarterback of this draft class based on both his athletic abilities and his passing abilities. If he falls to them, I would love to see them take it. I just don't know if they're content or not with Blake Bortles. And seeing picks like Leonard Fournette, which seemed like the safe pick but not the best pick, make me think they might just go with the safety of Blake Bortles, who did show that he's competent. People were saying before the preseason started that, oh, he should be benched, and I certainly wasn't on the pro Blake Bortles camp, but he showed that he's competent, and this might be an organization that is comfortable with competent.
Yeah, and that's kind of what it felt like a little bit with them going ahead with Fournette, right? Like, it almost feels like it almost feels like the Jags are doing what the Cowboys wish they did, you know, with like that strong running game, with an elite defense. You know, like, no team ran the ball more than the Jaguars in 2017. You know, like, Fournette had a ridiculously good rookie season, I would say, but what really kind of worries me is his lack of usage in the receiving game. We saw TJ Yeldon and Chris Ivory being used in hurry-up situations, which, again, makes Fournette a little bit more game script dependent than I thought he would be as a fantasy asset. Do you think now is the time to try and sell him while people are still remembering him as this guy who just puts up 3 TDs against the Steelers?
Yeah, if people expect anything like that, then absolutely he's a guy who I would sell. I would say that his rookie season was good. He was, per Player Profiler, both of us came from that vein. He was 13th in yards per carry against stacked fronts, 18th per yards per carry against base fronts, and 57th in yards per carry against light fronts. That tells me that he's exactly what you expect a guy of his size and speed to do. He can hit the other team in the mouth harder than they can do it to him, but he's not electric in space, and I think that's more of a reason for me to sell him, if anything.
Yeah, and just to follow up on that, Neil Dutton wrote a fantastic article called The Historical Comps for Leonard Fournette's Rookie Season. And, you know, he turned to the screener to try and see some rookie season comparables. And the screener had spat out Eddie Lacy and Trent Richardson alongside Chris Johnson as, like, comps. And, you know, I don't know. Eddie Lacy's had a few good seasons. Trent Richardson as well. And, you know, the less said about him, the better. And Chris Johnson had a pretty strong start, and then he just sort of faded away as well. So, you know, I guess there's a little bit of worry there with Fournette. And the other thing that really kind of worries me about Fournette is sort of his, like, nagging ankle issues. He definitely plays a lot worse when he's visibly, you know, I mean, I guess anyone would with an injury, but, you know, like, I don't know if it's going to be a recurring issue, and especially from a Dynasty League standpoint, I don't know if that's one where you want to get out, a situation you want to get out from under.
Yeah, his game relies so much on his physicality, as opposed to someone who relies more on finesse, that an injury like that could mean a lot more to him than it would mean to someone who relies, someone maybe like Duke Johnson, who relies on passing game ability. Like you said, Fournette's not exactly an ace in the passing game. So, yeah, for a guy who relies so much on his body, nagging injuries are pretty worrisome. I know who you're targeting in the receiving game, but give a little brag to everyone else.
So this is a shout out to Ryan Bobbitt, who wrote an article about Keelan Cole way back in around the end of August, and he really kind of got me on him in my deeper dynasty leagues, and I managed to take that swing in, on him, and then I was just trying to snag him where everyone else was dropping him on waivers. I know you did the same, didn't you, Kyle?
Yeah, I picked him up in a few of my dynasty leagues. I actually remember hearing you talk about it on a podcast. Is that correct, that you talked about him on a podcast somewhere?
That might actually have been Ryan. I think
that might have been Ryan. I remember hearing it on a podcast and thinking, I could get on board with this.
Yeah, I mean, you're just looking for a guy, and I guess with D.D. Westbrook sideline, they had to open the – and with Allen Hurns also injured, they had to open it up to, you know, Keelan Cole, and we were just kind of fortunate because I don't think they knew what they had in him. And it's just really cool to see him come on, and it's just a great story as well.
Yeah, I mean, they had a guy who was 98th percentile college dominator, as well as 98th percentile college yards per reception. To put up that many yards on every catch when you're the biggest focal point possible of an offense as a wide receiver is insane. And to see that, not pan out for until later in the season is kind of crazy. But then the verification that he truly is a very talented player makes him a big buy for me right now.
Yeah, I mean, he was a UDFA, and he's one of those guys that just, it kind of reminds me of like what Tyrell Williams did over at the Chargers last season, where he was given that opportunity and he just sort of ran with it. Now, I don't know if that opportunity for Keelan Cole dries up next season. I do believe that they will bring back Allen Robinson, and I think they're looking to let Marquise Lee go, and I think they're going to cut Allen Hurns as well for a zero hit to their cap, which might actually open up some kind of opportunity for Keelan Cole. Hopefully we don't see him go the way of Tyrell Williams, who just lost a lot of his target share to, you know, a suddenly healthy Keenan Allen. And again, why am I such a huge Keelan Cole fan is because he changed from DB to wide receiver, and this is a guy who just sort of succeeded, and he's just such a freak athlete. He's fun to watch. But what do you think the Jags do at wide receiver this offseason?
I agree with you. I think it depends if they can – they have the money in the short term to give Allen Robinson a paycheck, but long term they have a lot of money tied down with the Pro Bowl defensive players they bought, A.J. Boye, Malik Jackson, Calais Campbell. So if he really wants the biggest paycheck, he'll be able to leave and find it elsewhere, at which point I love Keelan Cole. And the same with Marquise Lee, although he won't command as big of a paycheck. If they cut Allen Hurns and let one of Marquise Lee or Allen Robinson go, which seems the most likely to me, I'm all in on Keelan Cole.
Yeah, and hopefully, I mean, again, this is a guy who you want to target as that final pick in your best balls if you're looking, if you're desperate a wide receiver. He's one of those guys who you just want. He's that splash play guy, doesn't see a lot of targets, but he, you know, again, he sneaks his way into your lineup with just one of those one or two high-end, high-variance performances, and you don't have to worry about setting him and forgetting him. But maybe if they cut Blake Bortles, and maybe if they sign on a good QB, or maybe if they get Baker Mayfield or Lamar Jackson, we could still be seeing more downfield shots and maybe less of the running game, which would also be a benefit for a guy like Keelan Cole. And I guess hopefully we're also rooting for – what are your thoughts on D.D. Westbrook's rookie season, just out of curiosity?
Not much of a ton happened, but I liked him as a prospect. If you look at the winner, the Biletnikoff winners, so many of them pan out to be good receivers. I think in a kind of a crowded receiving core right now, he's a tough buy, but he's also cheap. And that's another thing. When you said Keelan Cole could be one of the last picks for your best ball leagues, he's a last pick who really blew up towards the end of this year. I think because he has that undrafted, no-name brand type profile, just in terms of his value to fantasy players, it's so easy to buy him everywhere, and the upside's pretty big. So D.D. Westbrook, soft buy, just because he's in kind of a crowded receiving core and didn't prove it as much, whereas Keelan Cole's in that same receiving core and proved it more. So Keelan Cole's a big buy for me, but I can get on board with D.D. Westbrook too.
I'd definitely be on board with D.D. Westbrook if somehow the Jags fail to sign either A-Rob or Marquise Lee, in which case, I mean, you know, and they cut Hurns, which would be really weird. What do you think happens with tight end for these guys? I know Matthew Friedman has mocked the Jags taking a tight end in the first. What are your thoughts?
I would hope they don't take a tight end in the first, because I think their window to win is based on their salary cap, and that runs dry very soon. And tight ends typically don't perform in their first few years, so it would seem as though they're making a long-term decision for a team whose salary cap is spent in the short term. But that is just me as a fan of the Jaguars. In terms of tight end, I think they'll be taking a tight end within the first 3 to 4 rounds. But like I said, tight ends don't pan out early in their careers typically, especially on offenses that aren't super electric like you might describe the Jags. So I'd say for now it's Mercedes Lewis.
Yeah, and Mercedes Lewis is, you know, this is really fascinating to me. He had the most targets out of anyone in that receiving core in the red zone. He had 10 targets, he caught 5 balls, and he scored 4 TDs. So at the very least, if you're looking for a flyer at tight end, you probably couldn't do much worse than Mercedes Lewis.
Yeah, he had that 1-3 touchdown blow-up game, if I'm correct. Another guy, I guess, you know, these deep best ball rosters, certainly you maybe get one or two of those games out of him.
Agreed. I had him on a couple of MFL 10 leagues, and I don't think I binked those, but he definitely helped, you know, it was definitely a point of pride seeing that seeing those points come in.
So the AFC South, overall division on the rise, is that wrong?
I think you're right, and I think a lot of it sort of comes down to, it's really fascinating to see how Houston and Tennessee have both kind of leapfrogged the Colts, who for a while who looked like they had a lot of things figured out. Clearly, Jacksonville is still the team to beat, in my opinion, especially as you mentioned, as long as they've got this all-star defense and they can afford to pay all of them without destroying their cap. I think you're looking at, you know, the Jags as the creme de la creme, but also the ones who really you want to fear just from a fantasy perspective. It's hard to play guys against them in fantasy or, you know, any format of fantasy that you play in.
The Colts are the side of the coin that proves just how important having a franchise quarterback is, in that they mismanaged his injury and now they fell from the first in the division to last within a matter of 2 years. But Jacksonville has a bit of a counter argument to this, where maybe you just shut down the opposing team's quarterback. I think it'll be an interesting division going forward.
Definitely, and we should definitely be hyped for the return of Watson, and certainly to see what Tennessee does with their new coaching staff.
Both of those very exciting, the two teams that are probably on the move most next year. That's going to do it for the AFC South season recap episode. I'm Kyle Dvorak on Twitter at FFKyleTheKid. My co-host on today's episode was Hassan Rahim on Twitter at HRR5010. Make sure you check out the rest of our recap series. Thanks for tuning in. Thanks for listening to the AFC North season recap episode. Please rate and review the RotoViz Radio podcast on iTunes or your favorite podcast app. Contact us via email at rotovizradio@gmail.com and follow us on Twitter at RotoViz Radio. And remember, you can always support the pod by subscribing to RotoViz at a 30% discount through the RotoViz Radio homepage, rotoviz.com/podcast.